Good morning. How safe are we on the roads with these greasy roads that they are at the moment? I think everyone has to be a little more careful. We should be careful all the time. And why are some people so angry? I was trying to get out at a junction this morning and there was a wee man in a Mini coming along and there was loads of space to get out, but I wasn't going to take the risk. So instead of him, you know, there was about hundreds of metres between me and him coming down the road. But when he saw that I was like thinking about coming out, he sped up to ensure that I didn't get out. Angry wee person. Linda Hurley, good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Frank.
Linda, we have to take it in our stride, don't we, that not everyone out on the road is careful, courteous, considerate. And we're all guilty. We're all guilty at times. But as road users, no matter what way we're using the road, we have to, I suppose, give it more thought and consideration. You're the head of safe and sustainable travel promotion and outreach in the Department of Infrastructure. It's a heck of a title, but you have an interest in road safety.
I have, Frank, and it is a heck of a title. And there's two aspects to my job, promotion of road safety, which is why I'm speaking to you today, but also the promotion of the advantages of sustainable travel, walking, cycling and using public transport.
Sadly, we report much too often of fatalities on our roads, serious injury on our roads. The papers have an example this morning, the front of the Irish News, a very sad story about the young cyclist who was killed on the Glenshane Pass. We have an incident today where the air ambulance was needed for a lady who was knocked down. It's happening time and time again. Is there a possibility that the roads are becoming less safe?
Frank, if I put this into context for you, records began for keeping details of people killed on our roads in 1931. And since then, there have been almost 15,000 people killed on our roads. Now, that's a staggering number of people that have been killed as a consequence of road death. Now, the highest figure we ever reached was in 1972, when 372 people were killed on our roads. We've come an awful long way from then. Now, we're sitting so far this year with 59 people killed on our roads, and that compares to 60 last year. So we are moving in the right direction, but you're absolutely right. Every single death on our roads is one far too many, because those are healthy people that leave their homes and expect to return home again, and they don't.
Did we have 60 people in total last year, or 60 people up to this day last year?
Up to this day last year, we had 60 people. So this time last year, we had 60 people who died. Today, we have 59. So we're not getting worse at the moment, but we're not getting much better.
It's an incredible figure, because whether it's one person or 600 people, a family who has to face the tragic news of losing a loved one, they immediately ask questions, how could it have been avoided? And sadly, we all, I certainly know people who've died on the roads. I presume you know people who've died on the roads. I would be surprised if the vast majority of people listening to this programme don't know a family that has been affected. What more can we do to ensure that less and less families are touched by this trauma?
Well, Frank, we know that 95% of crashes where somebody is killed or seriously injured is down to human error. So that means that we, as road users, are making decisions on the road that either put ourselves at risk or put other people at risk. So for there, if we all took a bit more personal responsibility and made wiser decisions when on the roads, we could help prevent some of these people being killed or seriously injured. And today is one of the days in Road Safety Week. Road Safety Week is the 20th to the 26th of November. But of course, road safety is an all-year-round challenge for every single road user, not just one week in a year. And the theme this year is speeding. And the reason speeding is focused on is that it is the single biggest killer or reason for people being seriously injured on our roads. And it's just not breaking the speed limit. It is also driving too fast for the road or the conditions. So that is what sometimes people miss out on. It's the fact that the weather can affect the speed you drive at, the type of road you're driving on. If there are bends in it, if there are dips in it, we should be reducing our speed. The speed limit itself is an absolute maximum speed that you should be travelling on that road, and all the conditions should be right for you to drive at that speed.
The Department of Infrastructure have responsibility for the state of the roads, and they are, I'm not going to say rapidly, but regularly going downhill, if you excuse the pun on that. The state of the roads are not as good as they were 10 years ago.
Well, what I would say is, I'll just reiterate what I said. We need to take into consideration what the conditions of the road are. And if we can see that a road in particular isn't wide enough, or hedges need trimmed, or there's bends in it, or if there are potholes, we should reduce our speed and change our driving to adapt to that.
There is no doubt about that, but isn't there a responsibility on the statutory bodies to keep the road surface at such a state that we're all safer, that we can read all the road signs, that we can see all the white markings, that we have the corners trimmed in such a way, the hedgerows trimmed, that people can see when they're coming out of at junctions?
And that may be true, Frank, but what I would say to you, even if our roads were 100% all of the time, if you take into account that 95% of deaths and serious injuries are due to human error, those crashes are still likely to happen because people are not adapting their driving to the conditions.
Those who are speeding, those who are driving with their mobile phones and not concentrating, those who are taking drugs or alcohol and driving, I'm sure there are other ways of breaking the law as well, but those tend to be the three main ones. And the spotlight is very much on speeding. When people speed and they kill someone, does the law come down hard enough on them? I'm just looking at one of the headlines this morning in the paper. Pensioner's family slams insulting jail sentences handed to killer drivers. And you really can't understand what that family were saying last night on UTV Live about their grandfather's death. Because those people who, one of the accused in particular, after the incident, before he was sentenced, he'd been caught again doing 98 miles an hour. People like that should, number one, should not be on the road, and number two, should not be out in society.
Yeah, the problem with that, Frank, is that's a matter for the judiciary. We have no responsibility for the sentencing of people who are caught as a consequence of a road traffic collision. But what we do is we try and promote road safety, give people the advice that they need to stay safe on the road. We're about prevention. The judiciary are responsible for the sentencing of those that actually break the law.
And do you feel that the police are out enough? People who contact this programme say they're always, you know, the van, not so much the police, but the van's always in some leafy suburban area picking up money from people who are going past at 32 miles an hour. I argue that we shouldn't be doing 30. It's not a target that we're aiming to hit. We should be below the speed limit. I understand why the speed detector vans are out, but are they in the right place? Are the police setting up ad hoc checkpoints in the right places often enough to catch the real speeders, those who are absolutely horsing along in some country areas?
Well, Frank, the bottom line on it is people are speeding and the vans are out there and they're catching people who are speeding. And really, the responsibility is for individual drivers or riders to stay within the speed limit and to drive in accordance with the conditions and either the weather or the road. Now, for those people who actually go just a little bit over the speed limit, the people who say, I got done for doing 32 in a 30-mile zone, that's ridiculous. Can I just point out to those people that for every 1 mile per hour reduction in average speed causes an average of a 5% reduction in collisions. So that little bit over the speed limit could be the difference between killing a child who's run out across the road after their ball, or hitting a cyclist or a pedestrian round the bend on a rural road. So there's no excuse for breaking the speed limits, whether it's a little bit over or more than a little bit over.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Linda, thanks for speaking to us this morning. Thank you. Thank you. Linda Hurley from the Department of Infrastructure. And that is a good point that she makes. There's no excuse for breaking the speed limit, even by a little bit. And we got to get that into our heads. We absolutely must get that into our heads. Are the police out enough on the roads, on those roads where you see people driving like absolute lunatics? Are they out enough? Or do the vans just predictably sit in leafy suburbia? You can let us know what you think. 90333105. If we could only get the message across to all road users. And I'm talking to myself here. I'm a road user. I'm a pedestrian. I'm sometimes a cyclist. I'm most often a driver. Am I sensible enough? Am I concentrating enough? You know, we all have to ask ourselves the question and try and get that number down next year, the number of deaths and injuries on the roads. Thomas is a point. Morning, Thomas.
Morning, Frank. How are you? Long time no hear.
Thomas, I thought you'd left the country, but it's good to have you back on the radio. What's on your mind?
Well, Frank, I was just listening to that lady earlier on there, right? You know, with not much technology today, right? See, with putting a limiter in a car, say a car's driving along the road at, say, 60 mile an hour on a motorway, right? And it comes into, like, an area where there's, like, schools and shops and stuff. The car automatically shuts down to, say, 30 miles per hour, you know, like a sort of limiter. You know, and then you wouldn't have all these fatalities. And, you know, see, to be honest with you, Frank, cars shouldn't be allowed to go at 60, 70 miles per hour anyway. It should be more or less 30 miles per hour, a limiter in every car. Like, lorries have limiters, you know.
Do you know, Thomas, I'm beginning to agree with that sort of thought process. I absolutely am. Now, I'm not saying that they should be driving along and then suddenly a limiter kicks in when they come to a 30 mile an hour limit, a 30 mile an hour speed zone, because you always need the driver to be in control of the car, in my opinion, not the limiter in control. But if you weren't able to go beyond 60 in a car, if all cars had a top speed of 60 to 65 miles per hour, wouldn't we be so much safer? Wouldn't it be a good idea that everyone at top speed, you know, we could negotiate this, we could talk about it, we could say, you know, stretching it to beyond breaking point, absolutely. I'm not even going to go as far as 70. I think 65 miles an hour is fast enough. When I'm driving my car at 65 miles an hour on the motorway, I feel I'm driving too fast. Now, you know, I know you'll come on and you'll say, oh, but you know, these cars that can do 120. I don't want a car that can only do 60. Why on earth do we ever need to be going more than a mile a minute? That's the question I'm asking this morning. Why do cars need to go so fast? Peter's got a point. Peter, good morning.
Morning, Frank. How you doing?
Very well, Peter.
I noticed how the lady you were talking to there from the Department of Infrastructure, Road Safety, managed to steer you round from slippery roads, which was your point, to let's get everybody to slow down speeding point. Now, she has a fair point, but it's their problem to deal with the slippery roads, and yet she didn't quite answer that question.
But she made a very good point. Regardless of what the road's like, we should drive at the speed that suits that road.
All
now,
right.
The Department of Infrastructure are responsible for the state of the roads. She's probably not going to criticise her own department in relation to how bad the roads are. But it was important to highlight the condition of the roads in Northern Ireland are appalling.
They are indeed. To make that point for you, Frank, I was out on a memorial run, a motorcycle run on Sunday. And we were out for a few miles, and I noticed that even well below the speed limit, because it was a memorial run, the roads were very greasy on Sunday. It was a dryish day, a bit of mizzle, but the roads were very, very greasy, especially on roundabouts and main road areas. Some of the back roads we're on were atrocious because of soil and dirt and old debris. But there doesn't seem to be enough cleaning of the roads as such. And well within the speed limits, we were still slipping and sliding.
Do they actually clean the roads? Does that service exist?
Well, I would like to think so. I would like to think there would be a, you know, if there was a spillage or there was an load of old muck or something up the road from.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. When you talk about the greasy road, those greasy roads that we had at the weekend were as a result of the weather. We had a considerable period of dry weather. There's the deposits from the cars, from the exhaust, the tyres and whatever. That all accumulates. The roads are dry, and then there's a thick mizzle comes, and it's that thick mizzle that leads to the slippery conditions.
I don't know. Is there a solution for that then? Maybe that's the question for her.
Yeah, well, it's a good point, Peter, but I think the main issue is we really have to be, as you were out on your motorbike on Sunday, extra careful. Drive to those road conditions. But my goodness, the Department of Infrastructure could do more to make the roads, to put the roads into a better state. We'll speak to Terence, who's a road safety ambassador. Terence, good morning.
I like that one, Frank Ambassador. Boy, I tell you.
Well, thanks, you do spend a lot of time. You're a volunteer worker. You spend a lot of time keeping the roads of North Down safer. Go ahead.
Well, we do try, Frank. No, I've just caught bits and pieces of people ringing in there. I caught the end of that lady from the DFI ringing in there. There's a few things in your car that you can keep the speed all down. One of them's your right foot, and one's actually looking at the speedo. I mean, all these people, ringing in there, that guy was ringing in about the bad roads and whatnot. People are now trying to say it's everybody else's problem but the person behind the wheel. I mean, and then people are talking about dangerous roads and whatnot. I've never seen a dangerous road in my life. As that lady said earlier on, you drive to the conditions of the road. If it's slippy, I'm a biker. I've 86,000 miles on my bike. I mean, if you're out on a motorbike, you drive to the conditions of the road. You slow down. You can put both feet down. If you do 10 mile an hour, whatever you want. Just keep yourself safe.
I agree with all of that, Terence. However, the Department of Infrastructure could cut back the hedges where we could see the signage. They could redo the white lines on the road. They could ensure that corners aren't as sharp as they are. I know it's a government problem, but the roads steadily are getting into a worse and worse state here.
Well, I mean, it's lack of money too, Frank, but see, at the end of the day, and I don't want to blow their trumpet, but I mean, I've nearly 900 things fixed in the roads in about 10 years. And I mean, when it was DRD, now Transport NI, I mean, those guys and women and everyone, they try their best. If I photograph something, go out, overgrown hedges, a bad corner, potholes, everything, I can tell you now that gets fixed.
Yeah, but should you, and I've done it as well, and in fairness to them, they did come and repair what I highlighted to them about two years ago, and they came very quickly. But should we have to be highlighting it? Should they not have some sort of sheriff who's driving around checking to see where the roads need improved?
Well, you see, they have guys, Frank. I mean, there's people walk about the roads, and I think, like as they would call it, the inner band. There's people walk the roads every 4 weeks on the outer band, going out to the country. I mean, there's people that actually walk different bits and pieces every 6 weeks and 8 weeks, you know, depending on how it's graduated inside their circle. But I mean, and they do pick up defects, and you see them standing on the side of the road where they're re-machine, and they're logging it where it is, the GPS and whatnot. But see, all in all, Frank, you have to get back to it. The whole thing is the driving is going down the tubes. The driving is absolutely horrendous, and there's no other word for it. It's horrendous. People are doing things now in cars they wouldn't have dreamed of doing 20 years ago.
Do you think cars are too fast? The ability of the car.
Frank, they're only as fast as the woman or the man or whatever it is putting the right foot down. If a car is built to do 155 mile an hour and somebody just wants to try and make it do that, well, that's his or her problem. But I mean, there's speed restrictors. There's everything. You just hit it on your steering wheel. I mean, as soon as I come in the 30 and I bang, I hit the speed restrictor down, and she won't go over 30. That's it.
Yeah, but a car should never in Northern Ireland be doing over 70 miles an hour. I'm going to qualify that by saying there might be a situation where you're doing 70 on a motorway and you absolutely have to do 72 or 73 to pass something from a safety point of view. But you shouldn't have got yourself into that position. And I'm saying there might be a time when you do have to do that because that's what's needed at that second. So leaving that aside, if cars were designed in such a way that they couldn't possibly do, I would say, but personally, I don't think they need to do over 65 with my driving. But if no car could do over 75 miles per hour, would we not be safer on the roads?
No, I don't think so, Frank. No, I don't think so. I mean, that's in sort of then trying to label the car that it's the car's fault because it's designed to do maybe 150.
The reason I said it was we can't trust the people who are behind the wheel.
But you see, this is why we're trying to solve something else that isn't the car's or the manufacturer's problem. It's the driver. And you say you can't trust the driver to sit at 30. Well, those are the people are 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70, whatever limit it is. I mean, somebody doing, I mean, there was somebody caught, you were talking about the other day there, that man that talking today there about that boy that killed. He was caught like about a year or two later doing 90-something. I mean, the book should automatically be taken away there and then, you know what I mean?
Do you understand the anger from that family where the chap we're talking about has gone to jail for 18 months and while he was waiting to go to jail, he actually broke the speed limit to 98 miles per hour? A person like that should not be on the roads.
So you have to remember, Frank, I mean, he was caught doing 98. So, I mean, if you take, remember, there's a difference in your speedo. I mean, I use a sat-nav. And, I mean, if I'm sitting at, say, 70 in the car, I might be only doing 62, 63 in the sat-nav. So, I mean, if he's doing 98, he's probably been well over the 100 mile an hour.
Well, I just think 98 is scandalous to be doing in a car, full stop. Terence, thanks for coming on. Thank you.
Okay, Frank, thanks for coming.
Terence Malcolm there, who's with the North Down Road Safety Organisation and Group. Mark's got a point. He's on line one. Good morning, Mark.
Hiya, Mark. Morning, Frank.
All good, fella?
All good, mate. Tell me this. I know you briefed on it yesterday morning before you went off the show, but it was about the Kennedy Way roundabout at Asda and the congestion.
How is it today?
It's absolutely atrocious. A two-minute journey now becomes 20 to 30 minutes. You're taking away the roundabout down at White Rock, which is going to have a backup effect, congestion right up to the other roundabout, and then back up into Pembroke.
But it's part of the problem, the current problem, not the ongoing roadworks. When they have it all finished, it's going to be much more smooth, is it not?
Well, that is a problem, Frank. What they're doing is doing work and they're closing lanes, but that is not the initial problem. The problem is it's totally 100% congested. And what they've done is they've taken one lane away and give it to the bus route and forced people to do one lane traffic. So what they've done is effectively they put an express lane in on the left-hand side and give us one lane. Now, how can they expect traffic to flow freely when there's only one lane?
And do you think there'll be a problem whenever they stop the roadworks, when they've finished the project?
It's almost finished now, 100%, Frank. What they've also done is they're forcing people to go from the single lane traffic to take a left turn up Fruit Hill, which then impairs across the bus lane, which then... You can't go in the bus lane. So if you go in the bus lane, that's forcing you to go into the bus lane, and then they're fining you. They're forcing us to make mistakes, Frank.
Mark, I haven't driven it, the Anderson Road, for a while, so I'm not sure. I'm certain if someone from the Department of Infrastructure was here, they would say they're not forcing anyone to make mistakes. They are providing a service in West Belfast where they're encouraging people to use the new Glider public transport service, and that it's going to be an incredible advantage to not only the west of the city, but all of the city, and that people who drive cars are going to have to give more consideration to the possibility of using public transport. That's what they're trying to do.
Yes, Frank, I am for public transport 100%. And that's commuting people into the town. But what about the people going to work on the motorways? What about the motorists? They're not being taken into consideration. I mean, they're forced into one lane now. Well, what they've done is actually effectively robbed themselves a lane. What they should have done is put another lane in for the bus and give us two lanes. I've been doing that for 10 years. I'm in Anderson Town for 50 years, and I have never heard any traffic reports about Kennedy Way ever. But now, recently, on your report, your wee show too, Frank, all I'm hearing is avoid County Way, don't go near, it's congested. Every morning I'm hearing something about County Way. Now, that is, there's something wrong when that's happening, Frank.
Yeah, people contact us. It's I made this point yesterday that it's rarely on the Travel NI website, but people contact us regularly who are stuck in the traffic. They call Morris and they call myself, and they give us the information. Mark, you know, I've been invited to use the bus and to use the train and thoroughly enjoyed the experience, but it doesn't suit me to use either of them on a regular basis. So I understand where you're coming from in terms of the argument. Whenever the new glider service is in place, can the black cabs use the lane?
That was my next question, Frank. What's happening to the black cabs? If it's going to be, this thing is supposed to be every 7 minutes, a shuttle every 7 minutes. Sorry, Frank.
Where are you working?
I'm not telling you. This is supposed to be, every 7 minutes. This shuttle will be big giant shuttle, like a web thing in the middle, and it's so long it can't turn corners, it has to go straight, right? So when that comes along, if that's an express lane and then you can't go into it, how does a taxi drop a person off?
So the taxis, are they going to be out on the main road along with the ordinary cars?
You tell me.
And you tell me, I don't know.
They're going to be on, well obviously they're going to be down the road in the lane we're on, and they're going to have to cross into the express lane, which is for the buses to let people off onto the curb.
Right, so the black taxis can't use this special bus lane.
I don't know. Nobody's consulted us. Nobody's told us. Nobody's briefed us. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going on.
I'm sure that I must go. We'll contact the Falls Black Taxi Association. They'll know whether or not they're going to be allowed to use a bus lane or not.
I would love to know. This is why I'm ringing. I would love to know. I'd love some information as to what's going on. I was hoping Linda Hurley there was going to tell us. But then Linda's from Lurgan. Why should she worry?
Well, you know, you have to come from somewhere. Right, Mark, thank you. 90-333-105-077-66-105-105. If you are a black taxi driver in the west of the city, you can give us a ring, 90-333-105. It's just we don't know the answer. Will the taxis be able to use the special bus lane? Or indeed, will you be out driving with the ordinary Joes? It'll be mayhem up west. Mayhem if there isn't a lane for the taxis. Because, you know, they stop and start every time you tap the glass. Tap the glass when you want to get out.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.
Good morning. 90-333-105. Now, let me speak to Michael, who's on line one. Good morning, Michael.
Oh, Frank, how about you?
All is good with me, Michael. All is good.
Right, Frank, I've got a wee problem here, right? You see how everybody's saying about drivers and things like that, and the speed. Nobody is really saying about the general ignorance on roads these days, not just from drivers, but pedestrians.
By ignorance, do you mean lack of awareness of the rules, or do you mean rudeness, that some people would use ignorance like that?
The whole general lot. I mean, there's rude drivers who just barrage past people. There's pedestrians who just don't even care if there's anything coming. They just walk on and expect people to suddenly, stop. Well, you should stop anyway, but there's a lot of, I think there is literally a lot of accidents which are happening because people are being just ignorant to the rules of the road.
Yeah, there's a mixture of ignorance and arrogance.
Yeah, it is. It is. It definitely is. Because I remember just the other week, I was parked at a shopping centre and I was getting out of my car and there was this buck agent literally just drove nearly straight into me. Like, into me, not my car, but into me. I had to dive out of the way, basically. And he didn't even care. He was just like, oh, sorry, didn't see you there. I mean, you don't do things like that there. I mean, there's no respect for each other on the roads anywhere, I don't think.
I think it's a lack of concentration. The bloke is probably the best of a guy, but he's been using his mobile phone, or he's been, you know, tying his shoelaces while he's driving, or having a shave, because people see driving as a secondary undertaking that gets in the way of all the other things they have to do when they're travelling from A to B.
That's very true. But also, I mean, I've noticed, see a lot of kids these days, and elderly people as well, which I know people don't usually like have a go at elderly people, but I've noticed a lot of them just swanning across the road at junctions and things like that there and nearly causing accidents, which I think nobody really addresses it anymore, and I think that there's unfortunate.
Well, that's why we're talking about it today. It is Road Safety Week, trying to get the message across to people to concentrate, to think about the responsibility you have when you're behind the wheel of a car, to plan ahead, to look out and see all that's happening in front of you. If we all think about this, myself included, if we all think about this, we'll be better drivers. They're good points. Good points, Michael. Let me speak to Cormac. Morning, Cormac.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
Very well, Cormac.
Just a wee thing that Mark was talking about there on the Anderson's Tide Road, Frank. It's really basic and really easy. See, if they read the road signs, it makes life a whole lot easy. Frank, they're like lambs. They just follow each other down the right-hand lane, and nobody has the sense to use the inside lane after 9:30.
Yeah, is there this problem over there, whether they're afraid to go into the bus lane?
Exactly. Frank, read the road signs. Road sign will tell you, bus lane, 7:30 to 9:30.
However... Yeah, but this new, absolutely, you should use it. But this new system that's going in, is this an additional lane? Is this only for the glider bus? Can the black taxis go down it? Can anyone else get into it?
Well, as yet, the road signs haven't been changed yet, Frank. So it's still only a bus lane operational from 7:30 to 9:30, city bound.
Yeah, so at the moment, people are not going into it at 9:35.
No, they all stay on the outside lane, and then you see the left-hand indicator coming on just past Fruit Hill Park.
Yeah.
And you wonder why there's congestion for people wanting to turn right down Candy Way.
There's this fear of being fined.
Yep. I mean, your position for normal driving, Frank, is the left-hand lane.
Yeah, it's the legal requirement. You're supposed to be. You're supposed to be in the left-hand lane.
See another place. Seeing you come out of the cuts in Derryoggy, and you drive down the Lisburn Road, city bound.
Okay.
And past the likes of Seymour Hill.
Yeah.
Where you have a bus lane there, and then it continues right down Lisburn Road. The amount of people that sit in the outside lane there as well for no reason.
It's a very strong point. I see it all the time. If you're out and about driving at this moment in time, going into the city, trust me, there are no bus lanes out in suburbia at this time which are in place at the moment. So therefore, you should be in tight to the curb. It's a quarter to 11. You shouldn't be driving in the outside lane. Noel's got a point. Good morning, Noel.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Very good, Noel. Very good.
Right. I was listening earlier, and you made the comment about the elderly gentleman that was killed, and the guy got 18 months.
Yes, this is in the papers this morning.
I feel that driving and hitting somebody or driving and killing somebody is just legalized injuries and killing. The courts do not give stiff enough sentences for guys like the driver of this car. As you know, I was injured in a car crash. I sympathies go to the family of a grandfather. I consider myself very lucky. I was expecting the driver of the car that hit me to get something like 18 months. And actual fact, he got 4 years and 8 months, and he'll serve half that in jail and half in on license. From the time he hit me until the time he was taken to court, at the start, I'm not mentioning any names, but at the start he had 60 driving offences against him by the time he came to court.
How do you feel about that, Noel, that he got a sentence of 4.5 years approximately?
To be honest, I was shocked that he got that excuse me, my speech sometimes. I feel I was watching the news and reading papers just to get a rough idea of what is this guy might get. And I was expecting a sentence of 18 months to be handed down. So I feel the judge was on the ball, but where I feel she dropped it was just before the guy was sent down. She turned around, and I take this as a plead insult, not just to myself, but anybody that's been injured in a car accident. She turned around to the guy that hit me and said she took into consideration that he was injured in the accident. I don't feel she took on board. He went out in full knowledge in a car that wasn't roadworthy. He drank and he was over the limit. He hit me after an hour's car chase with the police at 70 miles an hour. His mother went in 2 days later, put him in a wheelchair and wheeled him out of the hospital. He had 140 charges against him by the time. Now, some of them he hasn't, it hasn't come to court yet.
Okay, well, so we'll leave it there then. If there's more to it in relation to the legal aspect of it, Noel. But you are a stark reminder, Noel, of the horrors of the possibility of something going wrong on the road. Because you know you're a friend of this station. You've been with this station from day one. You were a regular on Johnny's program. You're someone who we always associated with the program with this old slogan of Noel the Spark and whatever. And to hear you speak like you speak now, considering what you've been through with that driver crashing into you, you're completely in the right in relation to the rules of the road. It's a heartbreaking reminder of how vulnerable we all are on the road. And I really appreciate you making the call to us this morning, Noel. Thank you. You know, what more of a reminder do we need than Noel very kindly phoning us this morning? And he's happy enough with the sentence of the 4.5 years and not overly impressed by the fact, however, that in mitigating circumstances they were claiming that this guy himself got injured. But he had a litany, an absolute litany of driving offences. Just to go back to the story in relation to the Belfast Telegraph and the pensioner's family slamming the insulting jail sentences handed down to killer drivers. That's what the headline says. I just want to be absolutely crystal clear on who was accused of what and how the sentence worked out. Yesterday, Thomas Hindman, 27, from Knockbrack Park in Ardmore, this is near Derry, was jailed for 8 years. He had pleaded guilty to causing the death of Mr. Ritchie by dangerous driving. He also pleaded guilty to driving without insurance, failing to stop at the scene and failing to report the crash. His co-defendant, Stephen McGee, 34, from Ivy Mead in the Waterside of Derry, whose car spun out of control and struck Mr. Ritchie's car, was jailed for 18 months. He had contested a single charge of causing Mr. Ritchie's death by dangerous driving. The jury found him not guilty of the charge, but unanimously guilty of causing Mr. Ritchie's death by careless driving. Both Hindman and McGee will serve half of their sentence in jail and half on licence. Hindman was also disqualified from driving for 7 years, McGee disqualified for 5 years. And afterwards, Megan Kirkwood, the granddaughter of Mr. Ritchie, said the sentences were a disgrace. 2 years after causing Mr. Ritchie's death, McGee was detected driving at 98 miles per hour in a 60 mile an hour zone, again along the Glen Shane Pass.
Your point, your platform. The Frank Mitchell phone-in for you.